63 years ago this month, Pakistan was carved out on the world map. The country's journey has been a bumpy one. Military dictatorships, political assassinations, wars with its neighbor, Talibanization of its northern territories are just few of the things that put Pakistan in the spotlight. However, the country of 170 million is not just about terrorism, suicide bombing, and Taliban. Pakistan is home to 4 provinces, 12 languages, 10 ethnic groups, 40 of the world's highest 50 mountains, including the K2, and archaeological sites dating back 6,000 years. This is a country where hope and despair live side by side, where a political leader would spend taxpayers' money to enjoy a lavish holiday, while a rickshaw driver would donate the pair of shoes he has on to help the flood victims. On July 29, flash floods and landslides caused by monsoon rains hit northwestern part of Pakistan. Within 2 days, nearly 980,000 people had been left homeless or displaced. 2 weeks on, the flooding has spread to all the 4 provinces of Pakistan. About 1,500 people have lost their lives, 20 million have been displaced, and 3.5 million children stand the risk of contracting waterborne diseases. Among those affected are some 1.5 million Afghan refugees who have taken shelter in Pakistan over the past 3 decades and more than 700,000 people displaced by the war on terror in Swat Valley and other northwestern parts of Pakistan during the past 1 year. Hospitals are submerged and maternity wards are operating without electricity. UNHCR emergency response teams have reported shortages of food and medicine. Power and gas supplies have been cut. In many areas, mud in the wells had spoiled the drinking water supply. Pakistan is an agricultural country. The flooding has swept away 558,000 hectares of cropland. At least 10,000 cows have drowned. With the heavy loss of fields, the country will face an acute food shortage not only this year but also the next. The economy, which relies heavily on the export of agricultural goods, will also be hit hard. At a time when the government needs all the revenue it can get to rehabilitate the millions displaced. Just to give you an idea of the devastation, according to an estimate by Pakistan's National Farmers Association, up to 500,000 tons of wheat stocked by farmers has been washed away, and around 300,000 tons of rice has also been lost. I spoke with a local journalist, Salman Siddiqui, who's a senior reporter at Express Tribune in Karachi. He talked to me about some of the problems the farmers in the interior parts of Sindh province are facing.
Sindh and Punjab, they're considered as the food basket of the whole country. Thousands and thousands of acres of crops have been destroyed. So these farmers, their livelihood depends on these crops. Now, the situation that they're facing is they'll have to, they take loans to sow these crops on the land of their landlords. These landlords are going to ask them to pay back the loans. They don't care if the floods came or not. They want their money back. So many of the farmers which I spoke to, they were actually more fearful of their landlords than the floods. They fear that their landlord will cut them into pieces. These are the exact words that one of the farmer co-peasant told me. And but you see, when you approach the government with what the people are saying, their fears, they say that at this point we can't really help them in coping with their loans. So the people, the poor people especially, who have been affected, their crops who have been destroyed, their houses have been destroyed. Their future is terrifying to even imagine what they're going to do now.
Salman also talked about some of the devastation that he saw in some parts of the Sindh province.
The situation is quite dire, especially in the upper parts of Sindh. And by the upper parts of Sindh, I mean sector and above, which is Hospur and Kashmir. Hundreds of thousands of people are now moving from the upper parts of the province down to the lower parts, trying to find a safer place. But the problem is the floods are now flowing towards the lower parts of Sindh. And at this time, the districts which are in the lower parts of Sindh, which are Nawabshah, or which is now known as Benazirabad, Sindh Mathiari, and then Hyderabad, they are at a critical stage at this moment because they are seeing high floods passing through those areas. The government officials have set up hundreds of camps throughout the province, and on paper you'll find that there are dozens of camps and rescue teams all over the district, but once you start visiting those camps and those districts, you find that many of them are empty, or there are people sitting there where they are not the victims. In most of the camps, the arrangements are pathetic, and they don't have proper food facilities for them. Actually, in most of the camps that they have set up, people are just disgusted with the arrangement, so they prefer to set up their own tents or small huts in open fields, and they prefer to do everything on their own. Actually, what's happening now is that people are seeking out their relatives who are living in lower parts of the province. So they prefer to stay with their relatives. So they are on the move all the time.
I also asked him about relief goods and aid reaching these parts.
So aid is definitely coming through officials. They are arranging aid. Then the Pakistan Armed Forces, they are in action, they are supplying aid. Then a lot of small NGOs, major NGOs, they too have teamed up, and their teams are there. But and they are trying their best to actually send the aid to as many people as possible. But the magnitude of the disaster is such that not all of the people are receiving the aid. People are scattered all around. There are many people in many districts who are away from the settled areas of the district, so some of the people haven't been traced. People are on the move, but now in migrated to major cities of the province, which is Hyderabad and in Karachi. At this moment, there are around 30,000 people from Upper Sindh in Karachi. And here, the camps that have been established, they have been taken care of, actually. A number of people, citizens, common citizens of the city, have been providing them with food and medicine. And also government and army officials are also supplying them with aid. So in the major cities, we have seen some actions needed. But what's going to happen now is there are hundreds of thousands more are expected, so we'll have to see that these major cities have the capacity to deal with the new refugees.
A number of local and international charities are working for the relief and rehabilitation of flood victims. One of these charities is Faith Foundation, operating from the city of Karachi. I spoke with the vice president of Faith Foundation, Saad Khalik, who was recently in Sindh distributing aid to the flood victims.
The situation right now is very critical. It's a do or die moment for everybody out there. These people are desperate. They're desperate need of food, emergency supplies, water. When we went up there, they said that water, there was available clean water. But I just got a call today saying that they have an outbreak of cholera and diarrhea and gastroenteritis. So, you know, even the water supply is getting contaminated. These people don't have any shelter. They definitely don't have any food or medicine. There's a snake issue right there. They've already lost whatever little they had. So it's not like they could sustain themselves anyways. There's a lot of effort being put in, but obviously, you know, there's a lot more on a more sustained basis that needs to be done. A lot of these people are not stranded. They've been evacuated. They've taken up shelter somewhere, whether it's under a tree or somebody else's house. So if you give them raw groceries like flour and pulses and rice, they can pretty much cook for themselves. But they need enough to sustain a family of about 7-8 people. You do not even hear of a family of 4 or 5.
And how has the situation been with donations for your charity?
I think we've been pretty lucky. We've been able to mobilize people. We're very active. All our members are pretty active. I'm vice president. And the response has been very decent. You know, it's all about being able to mobilize those around you. We thought we were going to have an issue with transport, but because our sponsor for our first trip kind of backed out, because obviously, you know, we're not the only people they're working with. But we were lucky enough to find somebody else who's sponsored transport this time. In fact, our numbers are higher this time around, so we should not only be able to resupply to the families that we set up the first time, but actually be able to set up a permanent distribution point over there, you know, where we can keep sending transport instead of having to make the trip ourselves and tie ourselves on for that.
How many people did you manage to help when you were there last weekend?
Over 250 families with clothing, medicine, as well as groceries for at least 2 weeks. So this time you expect to hit that number around 300.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that these people have managed to take shelter somewhere. So are there any relief camps?
There's a lot of relief camps being set up at the district administration level. A lot of bigger NGOs are working in those areas, like Oxfam, and you have USAID sending in supplies. You have the Pakistani military doing relief as well. But the thing is, there's a lot of people who are not actually in those relief camps. They're on the inside because, you know, people, they have family who are working in the field, or anywhere else or nowhere. So they've been able to take shelter with their families, with people who've been kind enough to take them in. But obviously, it's not easy to feed 12, 15, 20, 30 families every day for anybody. So it's these families that are not being reached through the conventional system that we've been trying to target.
And you mentioned that now there has been an outbreak of cholera. What's the situation with medicines? Do they have enough resources to deal with the patients?
See, obviously, the Pakistani healthcare system left a lot to be desired to begin with. And on top of that, when you put so much pressure on it, it depends heavily, heavily on donors and volunteers, doctor volunteers, medical volunteers who can actually go out there and are willing to treat people. They have that, but because of the lack of a centralized, coordinated effort, you know, their jobs become more difficult. These people are worried about being fed, so obviously they don't really come and ask for medical help until it's too late. So that kind of makes the situation even worse.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now, if someone who is outside Pakistan wanted to donate to Faith Foundation, how could they do so?
They can go to our Facebook page. It's called Faith Foundation. We have instructions on what we can do. They can raise some money. Our account details should be up. They can send it through friends. They can send boxes. PIA actually has a very good system outside Pakistan. You go to any PIA office, and those supplies are actually sent to the military. But they have a box where you can pull out food, own clothing, canned food, put in the box, and PIA cargo is directed to the military, gets taken care of by them. As for Faith Foundation, you can send us money. Our contact details are on our page. If you have any questions, my number is also on my Facebook page, so you can just give me a call. All of us are pretty much there.
Mm-hmm. If people were sending relief kits from outside Pakistan, would you send out any items that were most urgently needed?
See, it's like basic commodities. For example, you have like potatoes, rice, flour, sugar, tea, dried milk, biscuits, high-protein biscuits, high-nutrition biscuits.
When is the next convoy heading down?
We're heading down Saturday morning. It is Thursday evening right now, so we just have tomorrow to get all our supplies back in. We have a lot of volunteers coming in tonight. And Saturday morning, about 5 a.m., we should be on our way. So 6 o'clock. So all of Saturday, we should hopefully be able to set up a permanent distribution camp in that area.
The scale of aid and relief committed by international donors to Pakistan is at least four times less than that committed after the October 2005 earthquake in the country. While the death toll is not as much as some of the recent natural disasters we have seen, in this case we have to look at the number of people who have been rendered homeless or have lost their means of livelihood. Going by the number of people affected, the disaster is worse than the 2004 Indian Ocean tsunami, the 2005 Kashmir earthquake, and the 2010 Haiti earthquake combined.